Hello, and welcome back to the Indiana Wildlife Federation podcast. I am your host, Quentin Collins, and today I am joined by Jessica Snodgrass of Moving Water Outfitters. Jessica, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in today. How have you been?
Thanks for having me. Good.
Well, today I was hoping that we could talk fishing. I know I come in the shop probably a little too much to do that, but in any event, just wanted to get a better idea of, you know, exactly how Moving Water Outfitters has been involved in the conservation efforts, particularly in the Zionsville area.
Sure.
I know Eagle Creek has absolutely exploded in popularity when it comes to trout fishing, and of course, plenty of other fish species to find in the creek, but, Moving Water Outfitters, you guys are just right up the road from so many of the great access points.
Right.
Tell me about some of the motivation for starting Moving Waters in Zionsville.
So there had been a previous shop in that location. Mike Exel, one of our owners, had actually been an employee at that shop. And then when he found out they were going to close, he approached Chris Snodgrass, actually my husband, and said, I think this is a great location for a fly shop. I think we have a great business here. We have a lot of people that love fly fishing. The fly fishing community in Indianapolis is growing. So what do you think about partnering and opening a fly shop? And so really was kind of as simple as that. Zionsville is they've always been a great supporter of us. They're a great supporter of fly fishing. Like you said, we've got a great access to Eagle Creek, close to, you know, not too far away from the White River, not too far from Sugar Creek. So it's kind of a nice central location. It's easy access, you know, just north side of Indianapolis. So just kind of made sense to stay there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as a customer myself, it's a little too convenient to be able to slide in and just fill up the fly box so quickly.
Right. You're not the first person to say that. So maybe if we move, we'll consult where you guys think we should be.
Exactly. Yeah, there we go. So tell me about what you do at Moving Waters.
So I've been involved with Moving Waters since we opened 4 years ago. First about a year and a half was kind of behind the scenes. My background, I actually graduated college with an interior design degree. And so as far as I was doing marketing, any kind of like print media, working on our website, social media, things like that. And then about a year and a half ago, one of our full-time employees took another full-time job. He still works for us part-time. And so we had a position to fill. And so Chris and Mike asked if I would come on full-time. So my role there, one of the store managers, so, you know, day-to-day operations with Mike, oversee customer service, still in charge of our marketing. So anything you see on social media, anything on our website, any advertisements that we put out, that goes through me. And then, you know, being a small business, we wear a bunch of hats. So, you know, working with customers in the shop, cleaning toilets, whatever, whatever needs to be done.
Exactly. Well, and if I'm not mistaken, you just got back from guiding a trip. Is that right?
Hosting one of our trips.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Where'd you guys go?
So we went, the most recent one, we actually hosted a trip to Belize.
Wow. Okay. So what were you fishing for in Belize?
So main targets there were tarpon, permit, and bonefish.
Man. Okay. So the old thing that I've heard is that if you've caught a permit, you can generally say the exact number you've caught.
So, oh, for sure.
So I have to ask, have you caught permit?
I have caught zero permit.
That's the most common answer that I hear.
I have seen three permit, which I think is more than some people have.
Yeah,
they're very finicky fish. They're hard to catch. You have to have the exact right presentation. You have to be very, very accurate in your casting. We had some pretty tough conditions when we were in Belize. Saltwater fishing, wind is always a factor.
Yep.
It was above and beyond.
Our
guides couldn't anchor where they wanted to. Poling was difficult. So we were working with some kind of tough conditions. So wasn't ideal permit weather, but we have a trip for next year. So hopefully if we do this again this time next year, I'll be able to say at least one.
There you go. Okay, so I know some people may not be familiar with poling. Of course, here, in central Indiana, a majority of our fishing will either be done from a boat, you know, on bigger water, or of course, maybe a kayak, or even we're seeing more paddle boards along the creeks. Tell us kind of about what poling is, like when you're out there fishing the flats.
Yeah, so maybe the most relatable way to explain that would be think of like a Venice gondolier.
Yeah.
So what poling is, when you're saltwater fishing, not always, but a lot of the time you're sight fishing. So you actually have to see the fish. You're casting to a fish you see. where a lot of the time when we're fishing for trout or smallmouth or panfish in Indiana, you're casting to places that you think the fish should be, whether that's structure, you know, riffles, things like that. So sight fishing, you're looking for the actual fish. So on a skiff, which is the boat they typically use for saltwater fishing, there's a platform on the back that the guide stands on. So it gives them a better vantage point to be able to see the fish. And they're actually using a long pole to basically push you around until you see the fish.
Got it. Okay. So a much different form of navigation than we're typically
using.
Yes,
much different than we typically see here.
Man. Okay. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, just kind of the growth of fly fishing. We mm-hmm. talked about it a bit at the beginning there. I know Moving Water Outfitters does some sort of classes for getting yep. people involved in fly fishing out on the water.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about that. You know, in those classes, who are the people that you typically see come? You know, how does the class work, and where can people find out more information about it?
Sure. So one of the big things we do is we have free 101 classes. So you just have to sign up and then show up. We basically run those classes assuming you've never touched a fly rod before. So I would say the majority of people we get are people who have never fly fished before. So, I mean, we start with how do you put a rod together? Because, you know, a traditional fly rod comes in four pieces. So, you know, which end do you put together first? You know, how do you line up the guides being basically the circles that the line runs through. So we walk through that. We walk through, you know, how you put your line on your rod, things like that. So, again, the majority of people we get are people that have never fly fished before, but we'll also get people who, let's say I fly fished when I was a kid, it's been 20 years, I need a refresher, or I just started fly fishing last year, I didn't fly fish all winter, I, you know, kind of want to knock the rust off. So the majority are going to be beginners, but we do get some interspersed people that just kind of need a refresher class, so...
Absolutely. And do you see kind of like I guess I would refer to it as like a throughput where you see people come in for the 101 classes and then you start seeing them at the shop more and they're just really excited about it and filling up fly boxes and buying rods and getting out on the water?
Yeah, we get kind of a mix. Sometimes you get people that, and it's also why we do it the class for free, is we don't want you to have any kind of, you know, any kind of investment. We provide the gear. We want you to be able to come, have a good time, figure out if it's something you like, and then if you do, great. If not, the most you invested was 2 hours of your time. So, but we do see quite a few people that come to the class, think they really like it, and then, you know, we'll pick up gear. We do private casting classes as well. So that's always kind of a nice second step. If you've taken the 101 class, you can do the private casting classes so we can kind of dial in on exactly what you need. Or they'll do a guided trip to actually get out of the water with Mark, Mike, or Ben, the guys that do guiding for us. And so it's not uncommon for people to kind of jump right in after they take one of those classes. So,
I'm probably going to have to swing in to get a secondary fly lesson because I ended up with a hook in the back of my neck about 3 weeks ago. It's bound to happen.
Yeah.
It's bound to happen when you do it enough. And particularly, like you said, when you're talking about Belize, when you're fishing in windy conditions.
Yep.
That is when it happens. And I learn, okay, when I'm casting, cast on the downwind side.
Yep.
So it's a painful lesson to learn. But the good news is that I remember one of the first times I had went in, I think it was Mike that told me, he's like, look, every time you put a fly on, make sure you smash down the
yes.
barb.
Yep.
If you're fighting the fish properly, you don't need the barb.
Right.
So all the barb is it's painful to pull out. So if you squash the barb down, it's much easier.
Yes,
sure. Admittedly, I thought of it when I pulled the hook out because it slid out pretty easy.
Oh, good.
And I was like, okay, well, that was a useful tip.
Yeah, I've heard some pretty bad stories of people trying to get barbed hooks out.
When you're messing with trout, it's not really that big of a deal. They don't have much on them that's gonna hurt you.
Right.
But it's more so when you're dealing with some of those more spiny fish. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be a pain in the butt when you're trying to wrestle just the barb out. You have, you know, basically the rest of the hook out. It's so much easier just to slide it out. And again, you know, if you're keeping tension on the line, fighting them right, then it's really never a concern.
Right.
But man, all right. So I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, I've lived in Central Indiana my whole life. I never knew that we had trout fishing at all nearby. I had heard of it, you know, down near Brookville and the tailwaters and stuff, but never so close to Central Indy. And then I remember reading a story probably a year or two back where it was, I guess Zionsville is now actually contributing to the stout trocking or the trout stocking plan for Eagle Creek. So tell me about kind of how that kind of came to fruition, because if I'm not mistaken, I think Zionsville is one of the only, if not the only, like town locality in Indiana that actually pays for its own stocking.
Right. Yeah, that's probably true. So as far as it being, you know, the kind of the only, I don't, not private stocking. I mean, private, not like someone's own home, but mm-hmm. yeah, most trout stockings are done by the DNR. So this is kind of its own unique situation. So the trout stocking started 3 years ago. We presented the idea to the town. We knew we had the fishery to support it. And, you know, we thought it would be just fun for the fly fishing community. Like you said, there's not a lot of local places to fish, especially in the winter. A lot of our, you know, a lot of our rivers are, obvious reasons, warm water fisheries. So, you know, you can fish down in Brookville. They do stock trout down there. You can go up to Michigan. Northern Indiana has steelhead fishing. But as far as trout fishing, there was no place local. So we thought Eagle Creek would be the perfect place. So for the first 2 years, the town actually, you know, oversaw the stocking, owned the permit, paid for it. So last year, they actually passed the permit off to us. And so last year, we actually became in charge of the stocking, in charge of securing the funding. So last year, Boone County was actually gracious enough to donate money for the stocking. So this year, we will make sure it's done. We, whether it's us doing the funding, whether it's donations. So we do own the permit now, which we're pretty excited about because we know the stocking's going to get done. So yeah, definitely that will happen again this year.
Man, that's absolutely awesome to hear. And I mean, truthfully, I hope you guys grasp the impact that it's really made for me. You know, I'm kind of that classic story where I started fly fishing, you know, years ago and then kind of put it down when I was off to college. It was really just spin fishing then because, you know, that's what I grew up doing. That's right. What I knew how to do. And then when I, you know, when I had a little bit more time and got back in town, you know, I ended up picking up a fly rod again. I remember Moving Water Outfitters, the first place I went to go pick up, you know, all my materials and everything, solely for the purpose of going over to Eagle Creek to fish for the stockers. And I mean, it's such a great time. And I mean, I think above and beyond the trout, one of the other, and I don't even think it's a well-kept secret, but one
no,
of the-
No, not anymore.
It's yeah, not. I was going to say, yeah. Well, and you know, I think one of the things I enjoy most about Eagle Creek though is in the spring, the white bass run.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know that, you know, there are other waterways in Indy that that get some white bass, but I really think that when Eagle Creek is on for white bass, I mean, it can be... It can be 50 fish days.
Oh, we had a customer come in. Now, it seems like this... We've had some weird weather the past couple years. Mm-hmm. Our springs have seemed they've been a little bit cold. We've gotten a lot of rain. So, you know, the water's been a little bit higher, but if that stocking or not stocking, if that run is on, it is on. We had a customer come in, tell us he stopped counting at 80 fish. He didn't stop fishing at 80 fish. He just stopped counting how many fish he was catching.
Yeah, I 100% believe that. The first time I was ever out there, like when I actually caught it, like right when it was on.
Oh yeah.
It was, I remember like I caught a fish on the first cast and I was like, oh man, like, I've always told myself it's bad luck if you catch a fish on the first cast. Then I caught one on the second cast, and I was like, well, that's either really good luck or I am entirely
done,
screwed
right?
for the rest of the day. But then it was a third and a fourth and a fifth. And eventually it just became far easier to count the cast where I didn't catch fish than the ones where I did catch fish. But and I've even found that it seems like they almost kind of localize. Once they move into the creek, they still find like little hot spots the creek. There are spots like where there are very few fish, and then there are spots where there are just bucketfuls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Man. Yeah. So, well, for anybody that has not had a chance to fish the white bass run in Eagle Creek, I highly encourage you to do so.
Yeah. Eagle Creek is a great place to fish. It's very, not only is, especially like you said, if you hit the run correctly, the fishing can be pretty easy. Now it's not all the time, mm-hmm. But it's super accessible. So a lot of, you know, there's some locations to fly fish that it's a little bit harder to, whether it's the waiting is more difficult, whether it's, you know, you got to park and then walk a ways. I mean, you can park and then, you know, basically be where you could still touch your car with your fly rod and you'd be catching fish.
Yep.
So it's super, super accessible, which is one of the things we really love about it.
Yeah. And you know, that's why I noticed, you know, last year I was fishing in the winter and, you know, I like to think of myself as relatively nimble and, you know, self-sufficient in the water and everything. But, you know, even I get a little nervous going out into cold water, particularly, you know, I'm familiar with Eagle Creek at this point, but when I was starting off, right, I didn't know the depth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think one thing just for people to keep in mind when they're going out to, you know, fish these wonderful waterways is just to be mindful of, you know, fishing in a safe manner,
right,
and not wading literally into situations that that can get you in over your head.
Right.
So, yeah, moving water is just something that you can't mess around
with. No, you got to have respect for it. No matter what you're doing in water, you have to have respect for it,
absolutely,
especially when you get... You know, one of the things in fly fishing in the winter is you usually have waders on.
Mm-hmm.
And so where you have a wader belt that's going to help from, you know, getting water in your waders, you know, you do have to be careful. So, you know, one thing people can always do is call us, make sure the levels are still safe to wade. And some of that can depend a little bit on your comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, for example, one of our owners, he could probably wade that creek blindfolded. He's fished it so much.
Mm-hmm.
I fished a lot, not quite as much as him. So I'm probably not going to feel quite as comfortable at a level that he might feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And there's different sections where if, you know, it's your first time out there, there's some good sections that don't have a lot of deep holes. They don't have a lot of big rocks. So that's something we can always help direct you to. It's just on your comfort level. So
yeah. And I think that's perfect just because, you know, for the younger folks that, you know, want to be a little bit more adventurous for it, you know, you can basically just point them to an access point,
yep,
and be like, don't go here, and just kind of like X out the, you know, the spots that have to be X'd out. But
right,
above and beyond that, you know, I really feel like it's useful for folks that, you know, maybe aren't, you know, enjoying the same mobility that they did when they were a bit younger, and being able to direct them to places that, mm-hmm, they can go out, still fish, still have a good time, but still return home safe to their,
right,
families and not get in any dicey situations.
Right.
All right. Well, I also have noticed that on Moving Water Outfitters, like social media and such, mm-hmm, it seems like you guys do some programming to get ladies involved in fly fishing.
Yep, absolutely.
Tell me about that.
So that's been one of my big drives since I started working at the shop. You know, obviously I'm a female angler, and it's a male, kind of hate to say male dominated, but because I feel like there's almost some negative connotation with that, but it is a male dominated sport. And so I have found a lot of enjoyment, a lot of, you know, there's something about going out and catching a fish. I've been fishing by myself for quite a while now, but I still feel really good when I catch a fish by myself.
Yeah, exactly, right?
There's something about just going out there and, you know, reading the water, you know, feeling like you know where a fish is, putting a fly in there, and then, you know, having a fish take it. So, and it can be a very intimidating sport for anybody, not just specifically for women, but I think when women see a male dominated sport, they can, you know, it's just a little intimidating for them. So that's been one of my big drives, is to open up the more opportunities for women, make them feel a little bit more comfortable. So we do a couple different things for that. So we have women's only 101 classes. Women are more than welcome to come to any of our classes, but we do have some specific women's classes. Some women are just a little more comfortable learning with just a group of women. I don't teach those classes. I'm not quite to the point where I'm instructing other people how to cast, but I'm definitely there. I can kind of help you walk through it. Our casting instructor, Marty, is great. He actually jokes that he loves teaching the women's classes because women listen better than men. And they also don't try to muscle everything. So he said those are two reasons why he really likes teaching the women's classes.
Yeah, I'm sitting over here like, yeah, those are two of the things. I'm not a very good listener, right, and I definitely try to muscle way too many things.
Right. So we have the women's classes. One of the other things that I've done is just started to have some women's get-togethers where we can just go out and fish together. You know, I'll just set... I try to do a mix where... you know, Coxhall Gardens is a popular place that I like to take ladies to because you don't have to have waders. It's easy, mm-hmm, it's easy to access. If you have any mobility challenges, things like that, you don't have to worry about, you know, getting in the water, things like that. That gets a little difficult later in the summer because the weeds and growth and stuff. But, and then we'll do some wading opportunities at Eagle Creek and places like that too. So just to give women an opportunity, and it's not a guided trip. So I'm not going to stand, you know, right next to you and, you know, tell you exactly where to fish, but if you need help putting your rod together, putting a reel on, tying a fly on, you know, that's part of what I want that opportunity to be, is just for us to support each other and learn together. I've also hosted, this will be hosted two women's only fly fishing trips. So the past 2 years, I've taken a group of six women down to the Smokies, and we fished with a fly shop down there, did two days of guided fit of float trips, and then 1 day of wading. So those have been a lot of fun. So, and it's been a cool experience, because we've had everything. Actually, I got my mom to go on our trip last year.
No way.
And my mom had touched a fly rod once before we went on the trip. So just about as beginner as you can get.
Oh, yeah.
She caught fish the first day.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then we had other anglers. One of the ladies who went with us has probably been fishing for 40 years. So we had about the extent of experience that you could get.
Oh, my gosh.
And everybody had a great time. And it was a cool opportunity to get to learn from other women, hear their stories, and just see them enjoy that whole experience. So
now, the other day when I was in the shop, when I popped in, you had mentioned that one of the ladies had caught a kind of a trophy trout, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was a big brown, maybe? Or maybe it was a big bow.
A big, on that specific trip?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was that specific one. I know I think you had just gotten back from a trip. It was maybe 2 weeks ago.
Okay. It may have been that. It may have been, there was a really nice brook trout that someone caught on the trip as well. So it may have been that. But yeah, I mean, there's been some... caught some nice fish on that trip. So,
and are you guys fishing out of like the Gatlinburg area, more like the North Carolina side?
North Carolina side.
Nice. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So I've fished Tennessee a bunch, but I actually have never fished the North Carolina side of the Smokies.
Yeah. I've never fished like the Gatlinburg side, but the North Carolina side is, I mean, sure, the other side is beautiful too, but,
yeah.
We just kind of ended up in that area, ended up with a great fly shop that was great with beginners, and, yeah, it's been fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something even worth mentioning, is that, you know, not all shops, I think, are designed the same in terms of who they appeal to.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, I've been out west, and there have been some shops where, you know, if you walk in and you're not familiar on how to tie on, you know, a hopper dropper by yourself, mm-hmm. and what you need to be putting on the hopper, what you need to be running on the dropper, they kind of look at you almost like you're crazy.
Right.
As if you're like, oh, who's this, you know, interloper coming in from out of town trying to fish our waters? But then, you know, my experience, you know, at your shop and many other shops in Indiana has been much more educational, mm-hmm. friendly, really making sure that, you know, they're kind of ensuring success. And I think a lot of them, just kind of because fly fishing is growing so much mm-hmm. in Indiana, I think a lot of them have really kind of had to adjust to the times to some extent and appeal to beginners more.
Sure.
And, you know, I think we've seen that, you know, through social media, you know, with all the different classes that have become available. And just being able to share a lot more information on access.
Right.
I know that, at least for me, that was always something that was, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up with parents that were supportive of me hunting and fishing, but weren't so much interested in it themselves. So
right.
Finding access to places was maybe not the easiest thing in the world,
okay.
when, you know, you're 10 and 12, but
right.
I've always leaned on shops, you know, like Moving Water Outfitters, or I've leaned even on the DNR to be able to point me in the right mm-hmm. direction. And just having folks out there that understand that, you know, some people need assistance getting started.
Yeah.
It's always nice.
Well, and that's one thing that's really, when it comes down to it, I would say that's one of our biggest, I'll say, missions as a fly shop. Fly fishing traditionally has this, I think, stigma, this stereotype that, you know, you have to spend a bunch of money. It's really difficult to get into. You have to have this huge library of knowledge before you can do it. And that's one thing we're really working to fight against. You don't have to spend a lot of money to get into it. You don't have to have that much knowledge. I mean, come to our 101 class, we'll teach you two knots, and you can get on the water and fish. We sell beginner's kits that I would say for $200, you can have a rod, a reel, a line, some flies, and you're good to go. So, you know, like I said, that's, we're just trying to, by providing those opportunities for beginners, for, you know, we really want to, and I'm glad to hear you say that, you know, we want to provide an environment that someone feels comfortable coming in, asking us questions. You know, we always get that, well, I have a stupid question. Well, first of all, it's not a stupid question. Second of all, we all ask that question at some point.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, we love answering those questions because we know that it's someone who's excited about fly fishing, and that's our ultimate goal, is to get more people to fall in love with something we're passionate about. So we love answering those beginner questions. And, you know, sometimes it's a good reminder for us that, you know, where we all kind of started. And, yeah.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I have to imagine that, you know, one of the most rewarding parts of all of that is that, you know, when somebody comes in, they're asking for advice, whether it be, you know, which fly should I throw, or, you know, what leader should I buy?
Yep.
And I, that's the question that I ask serially, is which leader should I buy?
Yep.
And I mean, I have to imagine one of the most rewarding parts is when the people swing back in the shop to tell you that it did in fact work,
for sure.
And that it was, they were so much more successful.
Oh yeah. We had, a lady take our 101 class, earlier this summer. So she took the class on Saturday. I had one of my women's get-togethers on Wednesday. So she caught her first two fish on Wednesday. She got a largemouth and a bluegill. So
okay.
Her first two fish, her first two species. She outfished the rest of us that were there, by the way. And then she actually came back into the shop on Saturday to buy more flies because she had been fishing by herself at their pond in their neighborhood.
Oh,
so
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of our, I mean, you know, we love hearing any kind of fish stories. That's
yeah.
Just anybody who fishes loves to hear fish stories. But you're right. There is something special about someone who is just getting into the sport, and you kind of see that spark and that excitement of getting into it. And it's a good, you know, it's a good reminder to us of why we love what we do. And
yeah. Yeah. No, my fiance and I, we just moved into a house up in Noblesville. And of course, you know, first thing I have to do is ride around, go see all the neighborhood retention ponds.
Course, yeah.
Go see what I'm working with here. And I was riding back to my house one day, and there were some kids pedaling out to the pond, and both of them had fly rods.
Oh,
and
nice.
They were probably, I mean, maybe 12 years old.
Oh,
like
that's
awesome. Like they were like young, and they were they were pedaling out. They had their, you know, 9-foot fly rods. They're holding it, and it's just dragging behind them almost.
Right.
But it made my heart so happy just
yeah.
to see kids getting out there and just so excited about, you know, a new sport. You know, I can't imagine they've been doing it for years.
probably not at that age.
Yeah, exactly. But just to see them go out, and I don't know. I feel like I've been seeing it more.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm right on that, but at least in my experience, I feel like I've been seeing kids get outside a little bit more. And ironically, you know, I think a lot of people talk about, you know, kids being, you know, addicted to social media and
mm-hmm.
just strapped to their phones all the time. And I wouldn't even necessarily disagree with that. But I think that although there are some negative consequences,
mm-hmm.
absolutely, there's also plenty of positive consequences as well.
Oh, 100%.
And I think, you know, just through all these different YouTube channels, Instagram pages, and now even TikTok.
Right.
People are making fishing something that's cool to follow, something that's
yep.
cool to watch. And
yep.
it's for a lot of folks that, you know, have grown up in urban environments, it's almost like a novel concept to go out
sure.
and pull an animal out of the water
right.
on the end of this, like, almost invisible line.
Yep.
So I think that, you know, I think that's probably played a, it's, I think, you know, again, as many negative aspects as there can be about social media, I certainly think that we've seen some positives as well, and, you know, how it's influenced, you know, hunting, fishing, and conservation generally.
Right. You know, it's a great way to put information out there. Like you said, whether it's information on, like you said, conservation, whether it's, you know, we try to put out information on, you know, what's working on the creeks right now, what flies do you want to use, how do you set them up? So yeah, it does provide an opportunity to pass along information and kind of, you know, to piggyback on what you were talking about, the retention ponds. That's, we get a lot of surprise when people find out we have a fly shop in the center of Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana is not exactly known as a mecca for fly fishing.
No, no.
you know, everybody has this image of Brad Pitt standing in a river in Montana, because
yep.
if you have no other knowledge of fly fishing, you know a river runs through it.
Yep.
So that kind of is people's initial, you know, kind of idea of what fly fishing is. But we have customers that the only place they fly fish is for bluegill and other panfish in their retention pond in their neighborhood. That's it. It's just a different way to fish. You know, people ask us, well, what can you catch on a fly rod? If you can catch it, you can catch it on a fly rod.
Yeah.
Now, you know, sometimes the fly is a little bit more difficult, but it also gives you some opportunities that traditional fishing, you know, may be a little bit more difficult to, but Yeah, I mean, like I said, if you can catch it on a spinning rod or, you know, bait caster, you can catch it on a fly rod. So some customers really only travel and hunt big tarpon. You know, some people just target smallmouth. So there's, you know, again, it's not, you don't have to be driving out west or going down to the Caribbean to catch big fish. You can catch, I mean, catching a bluegill on like a 2-8 in your neighborhood is so much fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's all I was about to say is I was like, oh, yeah, like panfish on like a 2-8 like a 3-8. That's a bunch of fun.
Yeah, and they're feisty.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I was joking with my husband that, you know, when you see inspirational posters, you see like wolves and you see lions and all these big like ferocious animals. I'm like, really inspirational photos need to be bluegill that take a fly that is about the quarter of the size of their body. And
you're absolutely right in that regard. And I mean, admittedly, when I started fly fishing, I was like, oh, I can only fish for trout. And
right.
Now, like, I think back, I'm like, what a ridiculous thought. Because, like, at the end of the day, it's a line with a hook on the end of it.
Right.
And you're just throwing it in the water.
Yeah, it's a different method.
Yeah, say how that occurs, you know, you're right. It's a different method. But, yeah, you can catch anything that swims with it. And like, I've actually seen on your guys' page as well that carp fishing has been a thing that a lot of people have picked up with a fly rod. I'll be honest. I've tried it. I have not been successful yet.
It's tough. It's, when I started fly fishing, I had fished for carp before, but only with like a traditional rod. And I think we use canned corn. So carp was kind of this, I considered it kind of this junk fish, you know, it was this bottom feeder. You didn't really want to catch it. And then I started fly fishing and realized carp was this like special species that not a lot of people had caught. So they're really tough.
Yeah.
You have to be really stealthy because they spook really easy. Your casting has to be very accurate. Your presentation, you know, has to be good. Now there's different times of the year. I don't know if you saw on our Instagram this week that we actually had some customers go out with Mark last week and caught some carp on some poppers, just some boogle bugs, which is not super common. One of the guy's brothers actually asked him to send a photo to prove that he actually did that. Because it's such an unusual situation.
So are they just saying things are falling off the tree and then hitting it as top water?
I think so, yeah. So one of the big times to catch carp, I mean, you can catch carp anytime, but one of the big times to target them is when the mulberries are falling from the trees. Because they'll actually hear that mulberry smack the water and they'll go after those mulberries. So I don't know if they're just kind of keyed in on that, thinking just something hit the water, so I'm going to go after it. So, but yeah, they're pretty cool fish to catch, and they're big.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Well, I have a 6-weight that I use for them.
Yeah.
But like, I'm starting to think that. I mean, I've seen some pictures where they're 30 or 40 pound fish, and it's like, okay, I probably need at least an 8-weight for that. But I mean, I'll get around to buying the 8-weight soon enough.
Sure.
Jessica, as we kind of wrap up here, of course, I know Moving Water Outfitters has played a role in some of Indiana's conservation, of course, through the trout stocking, but I know you guys are also interested in conservation more generally. So, you know, at the shop, you know, what do you guys think are, you know, some of the highest priorities that, you know, we should really kind of keep in mind here in Indiana to, you know, kind of create healthier fisheries, you know, create more opportunities? What do you think are, you know, some of the things that need to happen in that regard so that we can advance Indiana's conservation goals?
Sure. You know, I think, you know, at least for us, you know, continued education and educating people about the waterways is really important. One of the good things about the trout stocking is that it introduced people to a waterway that I think people weren't, I mean, everybody kind of knew about Eagle Creek, but not a lot of people used it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just by stocking those trout, it gave people the opportunity to use that waterway, be introduced to it. And, you know, people start to care about it. You know, suddenly here's this resource that, you know, people want to take care of. So, you know, as far as conservation goes, I think part of it is just reminding people that these are finite resources. I was actually talking to a friend once and I mentioned about anglers being, you know, caring about conservation. And she was a little surprised. And I'm like, well, it really comes down to it. If the rivers and creeks are gone, the fish are gone, you know, and if we don't take care of them, the fish are gone. And, you know, I would say the majority of fly anglers around here are catch and release. And so, you know, we're trying to take care of those fish. And, you know, I think we see these big issues and sometimes they can be a little bit overwhelming and we think, oh, there's not a whole lot that I can do myself. But, you know, sometimes I think just starting small, a lot of the anglers that I know carry a trash bag with them and mm-hmm. they pick up trash as they go along. And, you know, if I myself just go out and pick up trash, does that make a big difference? I mean, some, but if all of us pick up trash every time we're out there, you know, that'll make a big difference in the long run. And Zionsville actually has a really cool event coming up, I guess, depending on when you air this, whether it's whether it's past or present, but they have it every year. But it's an event called Creek Fest.
Okay.
And one of their big, the central event of Creek Fest is actually a big cleanup in Eagle Creek.
Oh, okay.
Where you sign up for it and people basically walk the creek, and I forget how much trash and things they remove from it, but it's quite a bit. So, but yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of different conservation efforts going on. There's, you know, a lot of different issues obviously that need to be addressed. And I think it comes down to finding something that you're passionate about. If it's something that you don't, I think, have a direct, you know, it's easy to look at it, you know, an issue and think it's, well, that's, I don't really care about that. That's someone else's issue. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you're an angler and you're looking into taking care of streams and rivers, it's something we all have to care about.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's, you know, it's something where every single one of us are out on the water. You know, like you said, it may seem like a small role, but collectively, you know, it does play a relatively large role. And yeah, I do the exact same thing. I bought one of those that I think it's called a PO pod from a fish pond, and you can strap them right onto your backpack.
Yep.
It's like a little rubber, like almost like mini trash can.
Yep.
But it's mainly designed so you can just stuff fishing line in it.
Yep.
And I know that, you know, derelict fishing gear that's found in the water is definitely something that interferes with wildlife.
Yep.
So it may seem like small efforts, but they're worth it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jessica, tell the people where they can find it. Cause I have to imagine after today's episode that they're going to want to reach out to get some more information.
Sure. So, you can find us on, Facebook, MWO Fishing, Instagram, Moving Water Outfitters. You can find us on our website. Our website is a work in progress, I will say. So, but we do have some of our products up there, but our website has our events that are going on, and then just call us anytime. We love answering questions. Stop in. We can, you know, like you said, if it's what flies are working, how do I set up a fly rod? How do I get involved?
Perfect. Well, on behalf of IWF and all of our listeners, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And to all of our IWF listeners, thank you all so much for tuning back in. We will be back shortly with another episode for you folks. So looking forward to chatting with you soon.
It is estimated that we have lost over 60% of our global wildlife population over the last 50 years, making the Indiana Wildlife Federation and its partners essential. As the state-authorized affiliate of the National Wildlife Federation, we work with over 50 affiliates across the country to protect, restore, and connect fragmented and degraded habitat across protected lands, working lands, waterways, coasts, and communities. Through conservation education, advocacy, and on-the-ground actions like habitat restoration and sustainable trail building, the Indiana Wildlife Federation is making a difference from Indiana's natural resources. Join or renew your membership today to support our work and help inspire the next generation of Hoosier conservationists. Visit us at www.indianawildlife.org to support.